Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.
It is May 25th, 2021. This is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. we were both way too thirsty going into this broadcast. We couldn't hold it back. I'm
speaking of thirsty, joined by our co-host tonight. No,
other than the thirsty one, Mr. Eric Quintana of Mouse Podcast. What's happening, man?
Sup, boys?
Thanks for joining us on short notice from beautiful Montana, home of Ted's Montana
Grill. Balls, Montana. Yeah, the original Ted's Montana Grill up here. And I mean, you can't go to Montana without going to Ted's Montana Grill, which I can tell you is not the best steakhouse in Montana.
That's a good thing. Yeah, Ryan's or maybe Quincy's or Shoney's.
Applebee's all the way.
Ooh. You know, people dog Applebee's, but in a pinch, Applebee's is pretty solid. I mean, you're going to be feeling swollen from all that salt.
Oh, yeah, because the sodium, for sure. Oh, my God. Because everything's just been frozen and preserved that they're going to cook you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this lovely Tuesday evening.
Very special backwards hat episode.
Backwards hat episode of the podcast. I'm Tim Herb. As always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Mr. Kevin Bradley, in the middle, in the aforementioned Eric Quintana. Yeah, it's had a few days to digest the result on Sunday.
How do you guys feel like a couple days into it? Better, worse?
I feel better about the performance in the Seattle match than I did the performance in the Montreal match, and the result was the same, right? Well, no, I guess the Montreal match we won, but I felt better about the performance in the Seattle match. Neither convinced me that this team is going to go out and be world beaters, but I at least saw some marginal improvements in the Seattle match personally.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like it's hard to, it's more of the same, I feel like, but it's getting better. I think there are improvements. I don't think it's not seeming that like the possession isn't seeming as aimless as it had been, I guess. But it's also it's tough to gauge, and it's because we're missing, and I don't know when we're going to get Ezequiel Barco back. I don't know if he's going to go off and play with the U23s in Argentina, if he's going to get injured
and miss the rest of the season.
So yeah, exactly. I don't know if we just have to start looking at this as like the baseline for the team and the starting lineup moving forward. But it's, I don't know. I feel like we're getting better. I felt pretty bad initially whenever Rui Diaz slotted home within 6 minutes.
I felt relieved. I was like, well, saw this coming.
Yeah. But that said, I mean, they're easily the best team in MLS right now. And the fact that we hung with them and kind of controlled the tempo in a lot of ways, and without maybe Nuhu on that back line, maybe we get back there. We net home a couple more, but I feel better. I feel like this team is making consistent progress. What about you, Eric?
I don't feel good about it at all. I don't think it's not a secret that I don't feel good about it. I think that the only reason that Atlanta found a way to grab a point out of Seattle is that Seattle decided to become complacent after their goal. And they essentially pooped themselves whenever anything else happened, because they are the best team in MLS right now, but they obviously didn't play like that. What a good team does when a team is not playing at their best at home they take advantage of those situations. Atlanta's not a good team, one, because they didn't do that, and two, there's nothing on the field, there's no evidence that would suggest to me that they're going to find a way to be consistent in the attack. They've barely scored. I think the only multi-goal game is Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And I mean, we know what Chicago is. I think my overall thought about the start of the season in a more broader sense is that this is going to be year three where Carlos Bocanegra, whoever is making these decisions when it comes to player acquisition, has missed three straight years in a row.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like that you can't put it that on anybody else other than the front office and Carlos Bocanegra. Look, I don't blame the players for not, you know, being, you know, world beaters. I don't blame Heinze for coming in and, you know, trying what he can do with the players he has. And I don't know how much influence he's had, but this is a perfect example of, I think, the kind of the disconnect between what the fans at least want on the field, what the players, I think, were used to in 2017, 2018, and what someone like, or whatever, the front office. I say Carlos Bocanegra because he's the scapegoat right now. But, you know, you spent DP money on a defender in Alan Franco for a back line that is pretty much solid as it is. I'm not saying you didn't need reinforcements. I'm not saying, you know, you didn't need people to back up the players that you already had. But did you really need to go get a DP when you had this solid of a back line as it was? You had this solid of a team that defended really well, especially the way they defended against Seattle. I feel like that's a wasted DP slot now. I feel like that's wasted money. And I mean, look, maybe I'm looking at it from a bad perspective, or people across MLS always dog teams that spend DP money on defenders, and I think this is right up there with it, especially considering how well defensively minded this team already is.
Yeah,
but I can't. I mean, someone offered me a bit different perspective because I would love to hear it. I don't know. It just goes back to how are we assessing this team in the offseason? How are we assessing what we want this team to become under Heinze, you know, even under Frank DeBoer? You know, I first of all, can we talk about how if Frank DeBoer had started this way last year, we would have been saying Frank DeBoer out.
Oh yeah.
I think some people were saying
that's a liberal use of the word "we," because I don't think we here, whatever, on that side of things, at least myself.
Frank DeBoer in season year one, I'm pretty sure it was already being told, or we already saw the signs for Frank DeBoer out around this sort of time within year one of him. I just remember hearing, you know, the angry people on YouTube. But I'm not saying Heinze out because I don't necessarily blame him specifically. I think his tactics are fine. I mean, Josh talks about it all the time. Josh Bagriansky talks about it all the time, how everyone seems to have a specific role, which we didn't really specifically see under Frank DeBoer. So that's obviously an improvement. But, you know, if the outcome is the same, whether you had Frank DeBoer or Heinze so far, then, I mean, who cares what the tactics are? You're still getting the same results. And right now the results are arguably worse because you can't find consistent scoring. You can't find anyone that is going to take over a game. And the only thing you have going for you is that you can try to be like Colorado a few years ago where they almost backed their way into the playoff spot by defending the hell out of every team. So fingers crossed of that.
So let's drill into the two things that you said so far that I think need to be discussed, which is the player acquisitions and signings and no major improvements as far as the lineup goes. I think that part of that is true, but I also think that it's not been a complete miss. I don't think there's ever been a season where it's like zero of the players that have come in are complete.
Well,
trash.
So like for this year, Sosa and Ibarra would be good examples of exactly. Players that are good. But
exactly.
Are they going to take over a game?
Depends on, are you expecting those players to take over a game, or are you expecting the players that were already in the roster to have a better role or a better positioning, whether that's a healthy Joseph Martinez or a healthy Barco, who is trending on the side of being a legitimate game changer in the first couple of games of the season. Without Barco in this lineup, the team, I agree, looks devoid of somebody to take on that role, and maybe that validates your argument about like picking up depth players at a position where you didn't really need it on the defensive side of the ball. But at the same time, you wonder – and we had this conversation last week, like, are you getting depth pieces at defense? Because Miles Robinson maybe isn't here much longer, and you can't depend on that through the summer transfer window and making sure that you've got that center back role filled up. And I also don't think any of us saw Walks having this big break. I don't want to say it's a breakout year because he's been pretty consistent year in, year out. However, yeah, he's cemented his role in that position in a way that I don't think he had prior to the Franco signing. And so I could see both sides of that leveraged on what, depending on which viewpoint you want to take. So I don't think all of these acquisitions were complete trash, and I don't think all of them were gold mines either. And I think that's been Atlanta United consistently year over year. Like, even in the first year, it's not like everybody was great. Even going into the 2018 season, there were still players that weren't standout players, but you had enough of, to use your own phrase, like people that were going to step up and take on the game or be game changers that were going to lead an attack, whether that's Miguel or Healthy Joseph or whoever that is. But those are the two players that we consistently come back to more times than not. And, you know, that was dependent on both of those players being healthy and consistent throughout those seasons. And one of the things that a lot of Atlanta United fans forget is the challenges that Atlanta United faced, the games that Miguel Almiron wasn't in the lineup. And you were on the broadcast with us back in Tim's old apartment or his old house talking about Miguel Almiron being out, and us all going, what the fuck is this team going to do going into the playoffs without a healthy Miguel Almiron and nobody generating chance opportunities for Joseph Martinez on the front line? So I think all of those arguments are valid, and it all comes down to depth and players that you have to have healthy and consistently healthy to be able to do that. And Barco just ain't been it, man.
I look at Barco. I'm done with Barco. So here's the other thing, and I'm seeing in the comments talk about how being patient, wait. I'm done waiting. I'm done waiting because Barco, I'm ready to sell him. I'm ready to sell Barco. Moreno, I don't think Moreno's going to be the guy. I'm sorry. I don't think he's going to be the guy. I'm done waiting for because look, we waited for Barco. We waited for Pity. I waited as long as I could for Pity. I waited even longer for Barco. And I'm done waiting. Like, if you're good, you're good. You step on the pitch and you, whether it's the tactics, whether it's your skill level, whether it's your dominance on the field, like, you find a way to make things happen. Barco's not that guy. Barco's not that guy. Moreno doesn't look like he's that guy. I'm done waiting. You didn't have to wait for Joseph. You didn't have to wait for Miguel Almiron. You didn't have to wait for LGP. You didn't have to wait for Nagby. You didn't have to wait for Tito to an extent. You didn't have to wait for it. You know, you didn't have to wait for any of these players that were legitimately good on this team. And I know that some people are going to be like, oh, what a hypocrite, Tito. But he was good. He found ways to score. I would love Tito on this team right now because he would find a way somehow, by God's grace, to score a goal against any of these teams. Because that's the one thing that we could really use right now is a Tio Villalba, a Giassi Zardes type of goal scorer that just somehow finds a way. But it's, you know, it's, I'm done waiting. I'm done waiting. Sosa and Ibarra are the only two where I'm like, great. You know, you already know what Miles Robinson is. George Bello is going to be as consistent as he is now, and he probably is going to get better, but he's already good as is. You know, the players that are good walk onto the team and are good. You don't have to wait for that. I don't care how young you are. I don't care, how much clout you have behind you. You walk onto the field and you play and you win and you find a way to prove to the fan base, the team, that this was a good decision to bring that specific player onto the team. There's no one that they brought so far other than Sosa. Sosa, as soon as you saw him, you're like, okay. First game, first couple games, you're like, okay, I'm, you know, you're sold.
But that's also contingent on the fact that he gets involved in the run of play. We saw several stretches of games where he wasn't getting off that back line. And again, where I think that Seattle had at least a marginal improvement over that Montreal game, where we saw both him and Miles Robinson getting off of that back line and having some run of play where the ball wasn't always coming back to the back line.
Well, Sosa, I don't expect to be a guy that's like going up the field, bombing the field. I expect him more to be that Nagby type of player,
right?
Which great, because we need another Nagby type of player. And he's proven, maybe not to the Nagby level extent, but he's proven to be something similar to where, you know, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with at that position. Now, I mean, we've seen him make mistakes, but you know, not nearly as many as say Rometty or a Hyman has made in a similar position.
Tim, I'm pausing to let you get in here, but you gotta fucking jump, dude. You can't just sit there and wait for us to stay quiet for more than 2 seconds.
I know, especially you two. It's different than having Dan in here to kind of slow the pace down. So first of all, I'd be remiss if I didn't actually go back and, call some people out for being, for joining us, because we didn't actually do that. We have Michelle, Elliot Beaven, Haletto, Dirty Bird Person, Brittany S., Pierce Hicks. And Pierce Hicks actually brings up a pretty interesting point where he says, the fact that we haven't signed a better attacker than our 2017 roster is wild. Tito and Assad won us more games than Barco. That's absolutely accurate. So a couple things. I'm kind of in the same camp with both of you guys, not to play like politics here, like, and be a politician, I guess. But I think that there's merit in what both of you guys are saying. I think Heinze, obviously, I wouldn't want to like do anything with him. I think that he's fine. I think he's good. I think his tactics are good. I think that he has a great rapport with the players. And I think that you can, it honestly, there has to be a scapegoat. And whether or not Bocanegra is the guy pulling the strings, making these transfers and making all this stuff happen, I agree. Like, he missed big. To me, the Alan Franco one's weird. It's a very much a head scratcher. I mean, in a league that is dominated by attacking DPs, Carlos Vela, Chicharito, Zlatan wasn't in this first season, but you know what I mean? Those are the guys. That's how you win games. That's how you win championships in MLS. And the fact that you would even, so first of all, it was a panic buy, which is weird, right? Because Lautaro Giannetti was the guy until he failed his medical, and he wasn't even going to be a DP guy. Like, he was one of Heinze's, one of his boys, right? He really wanted to bring him over. He really wanted to cement him in this roster. And then for to have that medical fall through, and then for us to use a buy down Marcelino Moreno to buy a DP who, I don't know if they didn't see him starting by this point, but the fact that like he's getting subbed out, like, well, I guess he was injured, but still, I mean, it wasn't two times though it's happened, right? Where he subbed out at halftime, once for an injury, one for his play. I don't think that he's really gelled with the team. And to Eric, your point, I mean, our back line's as solid as they come in, when it comes to MLS. It's very weird. The fact that, and I wanted to get to positives and negatives that people had on Twitter. Trying to find, damn it, where is it? It's from Alex Morrison, and we'll read the rest in a minute, but I think that it works here. So the positive from the game against Seattle is we're slowly trending upwards and the team has a fighting spirit till the end. The negative, and I think this speaks volumes to this, talking about our hit or our miss rate with the transfer market as far as attackers go, says our offensive spark of energy each match shouldn't be coming from Mulroney. It's absolutely accurate. Like, the team shouldn't
look toward the end of the matches.
Yeah,
or at least like, trending in that direction.
It's, well, number one, it's awesome that we found some sort of change of pace substitute to bring in as an energy boost and to really kind of change the dynamics of the game late in Mulroney. But it should be like, we shouldn't be as toothless in the final third as we are right now. And I know that's the last piece. And it's honestly, it's weird because like, it's kind of ironic. The Frank de Boer mentality was build from the back, or build your roster from the back, get solidified from the back and move it forward. And Heinze is doing the same thing. And the goals aren't coming. The goals weren't coming at the beginning of the FDB era. And I don't know. It's, I don't think that we throw the baby out with the bathwater, but at some point somebody does have to answer to the transfer misses. They've really been whiffs.
The thing that it doesn't really bother me, because look, someone brings it up in the chat, but I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due. And although that, 2019 didn't look nearly as awesome as 2018, 2017 did, you still had a very successful year. You almost hosted MLS Cup for the second year in a row. So some credit has to be given. I don't know if it's to the players or to the coach or to Carlos Bocanegra or whoever has been making the front office decisions, but that's, you gotta at least acknowledge that. However, we were all crapping on 2019 for it being a disgustingly unattacking, unimpressive year. And that hasn't changed. That didn't change last year for sure. It hasn't changed so far in this year. And so I don't know that that's on, I really can't pinpoint what that's on now. I would say more the player acquisition decisions, because look, Frank de Boer, you can say what you wanted, but I don't think he was as terrible of a coach as people made it out to be. I just don't think he had the players that he ever wanted. And I think Heinze might kind of fall into that similar situation. I don't know. We'll see with Heinze. I'm just not optimistic about this year, I guess. I think
the difference is the personalities behind it.
Sure. That's
all it boils down to, is that the similarities between Tata and Heinze, regardless of tactics, is the personalities. And you've got one guy who is on the sideline, jumping up and celebrating whenever the team scores a goal, like we just won MLS Cup, and getting yellow cards every other match for chewing out the ref and getting the buy-in from the players as a result, regardless of their tactics, versus another manager in Frank de Boer who sat on the sidelines and rarely got up, if ever, to make a conversation, and clearly lost the plot and lost the locker room as a result of that. Whether it was his tactics or individual players or relationships with individual players like Petit Martinez, and then ultimately Joseph Martinez and everything else, that's the big difference here. Regardless of the results on or off the field, like it's clearly that personality and the person running the show from the managerial standpoint that's had a bigger impact on the players and motivating the players to play. Hopefully you start to see that transition. You give him enough tenure and enough time and enough buy-in from other players that want to play for him, that can make a difference. And I think that it's cliche to say it's a rebuilding year or this thing or that thing, but ultimately it is. You know, you get your manager at a point in time where he has no real control or input over who or how acquisitions are being made or how they fit into this lineup. It's going to take at least a year, if not two, for him to really get that. Frank de Boer didn't get that at all. He had zero knowledge of what signings were taking place. You've got to give that to play or give that to managers like you did to Tata in year one. Like that's what the biggest, if anything, that's what I've learned over these 3 years and three, or not 3 years, but these three managers, is Tata Martino at least had some impact on who was getting signed, how they were going to be utilized. And while he gave an opinion that ultimately didn't get regarded as gospel in the signing of Barco, where he didn't really want to get him, but we end up getting him anyway, he at least had some pull on getting others and was scouting others like Joseph Martinez, Miguel Almiron, and stuff like that. That's not something that Frank de Boer got, and it's certainly not something that Heinze has gotten this early on in their tenure. Sure. So you've got to be able to allow those managers to have the time and to gain the respect in the locker room with an existing culture and an existing program to get new players in there that not only work with that system, but that could improve it in some way. And it's just not going to happen 4 months into a new manager. You know?
I feel like the managers, the last two, are like, they're the kids whose moms bring them home clothes from Sears. They're like, I got you these. Like the
Marcelino, like, hey.
Moreno is like that really nice pair of Jinkos, like gonna be really good, you know, for like eighth grade year, and then you're gonna grow out of them and then you can't wear them next year. Then you try to wear them and it's kind of embarrassing. It's like you have to be appreciative of the front, because it's your job, it's your mom, but yeah. At the end of the day, you didn't pick out the clothes. But you have to wear them, otherwise.
So and going back to the Frank de Boer thing a little bit, because there's a good chance that maybe Frank de Boer understood what he had and was like, this is not an attacking team. This is not an attacking team, because maybe they went into the 2019 season thinking that, you know, we're not planning on changing things. We're going to run the same style of attack that we did under Tata Martino. And then he looked at the team he had and was like, this is not that. And we can't do that with Pity Martinez and Barco and whatever. And I think I'm more of the belief now, having watched the first, whatever, 10 total games that we've seen Atlanta United play, that it's more a product of that while the fans and even the players want to see more attack, more kind of just kind of going forward, less, you know, side to side, back passing, that type of thing, and more like 2017, 2018. You just don't have the players to do it. I mean, you heard Joseph talk about how, you know, you win games with goals, not with possession, something to that effect. And he's absolutely right. That's the same stuff you heard last year.
Oh yeah.
We just, we have a better personality at the helm. That's, you know, every day with the players to, I guess that has an understanding that's how these players want to play, but maybe that just isn't going to happen until certain decisions are made in the player acquisition realm that can lead to someone in the midfield stepping up and being just an absolute boss against all these other MLS teams. Until that happens, I just think it's going to be status quo. Atlanta United might get lucky that they find two goals in a game and are able to defend the hell out of whoever they play. But this isn't going to be a team that's going to be scoring 3-4 games on a regular basis. That's for damn sure. And two is going to be asking for a lot. If you go down one, you're not winning the game. And that's a fact at this point, I think.
I think that's actually a good point. It might speak to the tactical mindset or just of Frank De Boer and of Gabriel Heinze for them to see, I have to figure out a way to get points out of this game. How do I do it? I know that playing keep away essentially is going to almost secure me a point game in, game out. And
at least until something from the front office can happen.
No,
my thing is, look, I wouldn't be mad if it would honestly might even kind of push the front office to make a move sooner if, and I wouldn't expect him to do this, but kind of in like fantasy land, if Heinze decided, you know what, we're going to play the entire match like it's the 90th minute and we're down by one. Because that seems to be where that team comes alive. And all
just
of a sudden,
run
you see,
them in, but then you just run your players into the ground.
I know. 60th minute comes around. All of a sudden, everyone's dead.
They did the first three games. Like, I mean,
I get
honestly,
it,
but, that's what Sosa was dead by the 70th minute.
But if Heinze is looking for specific kind of players and he wants to play his way and his play, the way he wants to play isn't necessarily like this, where it is more reminiscent to Frank De Boer than Tata Martino, then maybe that might be what he has to do. I don't know. Like I obviously we're not privy to the conversations they're having, or we're not inside the mind of Gabriel Heinze, but I just can't imagine that he came and decided, yeah, we're gonna play like this. We're gonna play very passive and control the possession, and we'll figure it out in the final third whenever we figure it out. I can tell you this. You can ask for, I've heard the discussion about, if we had Gressel or something to that effect, like if we had better crossing or if we had, better players out on the wings or whatever, you're not going to get a good ball into a how tall is Joseph? 5'8", 5'9", something like that, surrounded by four defenders. Because that's literally all that's been happening, is that you're finding him in the box amongst a bevy of defenders, and there's no chance that he's going to get to that ball first. Especially considering he's still working on getting back to 100%.
Yeah.
So
I do like this. He said, CM, new name, I believe, in the trap, saying we'll be privy to those conversations in 2 years when Felipe's next bomba drops. That's absolutely true. And I just want to validate myself because our buddy Gustavo Rodriguez down in Buenos Aires saying a player who is not a DP in Argentina cannot be a DP in MLS. I don't know what happened with Franco, but it's weird.
Yeah. No kidding. How much well stock done. Do you guys put in? The other thing that I've noticed, especially over the past 2 years, in the roster is the lack of veteran MLS experience in this roster and in the lineup versus what we saw in the first 3 years. Whether that's Michael Parkhurst, Jeff Lorenowitz, Darlington Nagbe, our experience has just been with the players that have been playing in the league for the past 5 years on Atlanta United. Like, we have nobody that has been brought in from another team that's got a lot of MLS tutelage to kind of know how the league plays, has been in the league for a while, and is just sort of that utility player week in and week out. I mean, do you take any stock in that based on MLS kind of being a transitional league, for lack of a better term?
I don't know. I personally, I don't put that much stock into it. Again, I think if you can play, you can come in and play. I don't know how much
you say that, but Pity Martinez, a South American Player of the Year, and does shit in the league.
Yeah, well, I mean, that still baffles me because I don't know how he won that award. I mean, look, there's a very solid reason he is where he is now and not playing in Europe for whatever reason. There's a reason that Barco's not. I just don't think we have the right players. I just don't. I think that. I almost feel bad for Frank De Boer because he's sitting there and we're all kind of crapping on him, and it might not never have been his fault, because I just don't see where it's like you struck gold in 2017 and decided, cool, we're good.
Well,
you never replaced. You wanted to play a style like under Tata Martino, but you never replaced the reason you had that style to begin with. And that was Miguel Almirón. You never replace that. Right. And when you don't replace that, you know, you can't expect to have the same result. It's not, that's not how that works. I just don't, MLS veteran experience.
I think it's the dollars.
Maybe.
Like, that's what's missing, is that Atlanta United has stretched themselves so much because of the salary cap league, where they're paying so much for the players that they do have versus the, for lack of a better term, like more budget MLS players. And that's ultimately why Nagby left, right? Like, he wanted to get fucking paid, doesn't get paid. Gressel, again, wasn't really necessarily MLS veteran, but certainly had the makings of it. And you see these players have a tenure in the league or have some success in the league and ultimately are a little bit less expensive than what some of these other players that are being brought from outside the league in that you have to pay a little bit more capital for. I mean, as much as I love Hyndman, his salary is exponentially larger than what a Michael Parkhurst would have been, you know, or something like that. And I think that's maybe where the disconnect is in the salary, where maybe your marquee players outside of the DP positions are less impactful because they're having to be distributed over more bodies because of how much they're garnering, you know, because you're putting all that money into all of these different players rather than in a select few players that can be bigger.
I would have loved to have seen an MLS veteran for a lot cheaper than Alan Franco.
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly. And that's what I'm
getting. Now that we have Alan Franco, I love that he's here. I want him to succeed. Yeah. All the best to Alan Franco, but
no, absolutely. But that's what I'm getting at. It's like,
without Alan Franco, we're fine defensively.
Like, you've got to have some of that. You've got to have some of that negotiate. Like, why do you let a player like Gallagher go, you know, last year, who could have maybe given you some spark?
Who was the best attacking player in Atlanta United toward the end of last year?
You're losing these utility players. Like, there are none of those players. And so your capital is getting redistributed in a way that isn't necessarily giving you as much impact or bang for your buck that you were getting out of a Tito Villalba or something like that, where you were paying them not a DP salary, but close to it. And you were getting some equal value out of it in their playtime.
I mean, Jürgen Damm is making $1.5 million a year. So I think that's,
again, but that all falls in the front office.
No, absolutely.
You're paying Jürgen Damm way more than he's worth. Mm-hmm. But what's weird is that you're paying a Jürgen Damm something he's not worth. You're paying an Alan Franco DP money, which, whatever. It's more about the fact that you paid you paid DP money for a defender. Alan Franco is fine, but it's more about the fact that you paid DP money for a defender. And then you let, you know, Julian Gressel go over not that much more money.
No,
after we sold the whole thing.
Yeah.
Those are the things I don't understand. Whether Julian Gressel or whether Carlos Bocanegra maybe didn't like the fact that Julian Gressel was trying to strong arm him. You know, you think about what happened with him and Nagby. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe it's like a pride or an ego thing. I don't know. But the decisions that have made this team not be able to compete the same way outside of 2018 or 2019, but it looked like garbage. You haven't been able to repeat what the love you had for this team in 2017, 2018 because of the decisions that have been made by the front office, and that's carried over into this year. And unless something extraordinary happens with these players, I think we are watching what we have for this year. I don't think anything gets better.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it gets worse.
I think it gets marginally better. I can't see it getting substantially worse. And I don't see it getting substantially better either, to your
point. I can see a group of players that are tired of playing defensively just getting too tired of playing defensively.
Yep.
I can see that.
And again, I can see the makings of things getting better based on the Seattle game. Like, the possession seemed to be with a purpose. It wasn't so much back passing. You have some of the chemistry issues where there was some link up play on the front end of the 18-yard box that just didn't really pan out the way that you would hope for it to. Like, if those things start clicking, again, it's not a substantial improvement where all of a sudden those two things change and you're putting up 5 goals on the Seattle team, but maybe you get one in a run of play versus having to depend on a PK. You know, some of those that you get a couple more shots on goal versus just shots. You know, it's those kinds of things that, like, I think if we see some marginal improvement, that's still a big win going into playoffs. But I don't think that this team is an MLS Cup winner as it stands right now. And I don't expect it to be by the end of the season unless some drastic things change in this lineup.
The one positive note about this season is that everything can change after the midway point of the season. We've seen that. Seattle has proven that. I think Toronto's proven
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows what could happen, but my confidence is I don't go into a game expecting him to win. I don't go, if I get it, great. And I'm happy for it. But I mean, we come away with a draw against one of the best team in MLS. And I'm like, I don't feel any different. Like this is, I don't care that we got a point against the best team in the league. I don't care that we, you know, struggled through that, which whatever, you didn't do enough to prove that throughout the course of the rest of this season. And you haven't been proving that throughout the rest of the season, you're going to find a way to be able to outlast the rigors of the league. I think this team is pretty fragile as it is right now. And it's not a mentality thing. I think it's that at some point they're going to be tired of not winning games, not scoring enough goals, that we're going to hear about the same similar conversations, maybe not towards Heinze, hearing the same sort of verbiage that we heard last year where, you know, where we possess too much. What I don't want to hear is, you know what, we still got a way to work on things. We're still doing things to kind of, you know, develop ourselves in the attack. You know, we're still got to work harder on certain things. No, like at some point, the working hard has got to turn into something productive on the field. Hard has to amount to wins, amount to some kind of success. Eventually, we got to get to the point where we're working hard and we see the product on the field. And for a lot, hasn't happened.
Yeah. You know, the main thing that we're really talking about here is how to be more confident. And what better way to feel confident than with our buddies over at Manscaped.
Support for this episode of Home Before Dark is brought to you by Manscaped, who are the best in below the waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. I never get tired of saying that. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. As we said, Don Garber, get on your shit. You guys are still on MLS 2.0, and we're over here with the Lawnmower 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code HBD at manscaped.com. We are we're pretty lucky that Manscaped reached out to us not that long ago and gave us exclusive access. I say exclusive. We were one of the first ones to get access.
You gave Manscaped exclusive access.
Yes, exactly. Oh,
yeah, they certainly got it now.
we were one of the first to get the Lawnmower 4.0, and I have to say it is quite a piece of engineering.
I've never felt more confident in my family jewels. Let's just put it that way. I mean, you want to talk about lack of confidence in Atlanta United. I mean, there's one thing that builds confidence, and it's work with the Lawnmower 4.0, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. They sent us a pair of boxers as well. They have, I think, anti-chafing boxers that are absolutely just the most comfortable pairs of boxers I've ever worn. But, you know, some of the, like, they have wireless charging. Like, how great is it? Like, I don't know if you guys have had those trimmers where you have to have, like, the figure eight type charger plug that goes in and it sits on your counter and gets knocked out.
It's like you're traveling to England. You got to have that weird...
You gotta have the adapter
to charge it up. Yeah, no, exactly.
Not this though. Like you have a really nice, like sleek charging station. You put it in the corner. This thing is the Lawnmower 4.0 is not only waterproof somehow, but it also is has wireless charging. The fact that it's waterproof, I think, is a selling point in and of itself. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
And if your power goes out, it's also got an LED light on there. So no matter what, Manscaped's got you covered. Get 20% off and free shipping with code HBD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code HBD. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
Ordering mine right now.
Yeah, you need it.
So
Brian Daniels' Lawnmower 4.0 is so micro-shipped. Total peep show. Oh man, why did my lawnmower come with a GoPro attached to it? This is weird.
Oh geez. So to get back to the reactions that we had on Twitter from the crowd, from the homies over there for the game on Sunday against Seattle. Well, we asked typical, you know, one positive, one negative. Toodles McToot, aka at Seattle 68, saying the positive, I'm seeing more and more of the triangle play that we were hearing about early on. Tells me things are beginning to click a bit. The negative, our attacking midfielders still think they can do better with their dribble than they can passing the ball in the attacking third. That's something that's like, I don't know. It doesn't seem to matter who's playing the quote unquote 10 role, or like even, I guess Marcelino Moreno's not playing the 10 necessarily. He's playing over on the left side, but whoever's leading that attack behind Joseph seems to be dribbling out possession of the ball instead of like trying to take a chance more often than not. I feel like Moreno's getting more comfortable, I think, taking shots. But I mean, between Barco and Moreno, it seems like, I don't know, we dribble the ball way too often in the attacking third.
You know, the other thing that I think about with the players and personalities that we've been talking about, when was the last time we had a player in this lineup that looked like they were having fun playing? Like, that's the big difference in like Darlington Nagbe, Miguel Almiron, like players that were smiling and enjoying playing the game that you just, I don't know. Personally, I have Eric Rometty, maybe you could argue in some regard, like, but at least in the past 2 years, nobody in this lineup looks like they're really enjoying them. So maybe Barco here and there, but it's not like you've got that personality in the lineup even that is sort of getting the team to rally behind them either.
It's almost like you've lost all star power because no one, I mean, I'm going to repeat this over and over again, but no one's stepping up to be that guy that can kind of take over a game. And that's that is what it's going to take. The reason you see everything going out wide is because no one can, you know, dribble through one guy to open up some space for Joseph so that he can make a tiny little run and get a through ball into space and or that he can run onto and then, you know, chip it over the goalkeeper. Like, that's not happening. One, because I don't think Joseph is ready. But secondly, you don't have anyone that can do that. You don't have anyone that's going to, I would even rather forget the playing at the whole game. Like, it's the 90th minute and you're down by one. Just take chances. And if it doesn't come off, then who cares? Whatever. We're in the same boat we were before. Like, just take chances in the final third. And if it doesn't work out, then whatever. I would rather see that. It doesn't even feel like they want to. It feels like they play the entire 90 minutes hoping they don't mess up.
Yeah, exactly. If you go from 65% possession down to 50% because you're getting dispossessed in the final third, but you're actually taking chances and your shot and XG and everything else kind of goes up as a result of that, I'm all for that. I mean, because of the points that we've already made out, which is I feel wholly confident in our back line and our ability to cover and to take care of anybody that's going to create chances the opposite direction. Like, I'm willing to concede some of that possession if we're going to get a little bit more opportunities on goal, and whether they're risky opportunities or they pan out to be a more consistent run of play. Like, you've got to be doing something besides just playing keep away at a certain point.
Yeah.
No, agreed. Totally.
You don't even have a lot of creativity, like creative buildup, nothing. Like, I'm trying to think, has there been a play this year where Atlanta United scored and it was like just a series of passes that just looked too good to be true, and all of a sudden you find yourself, you know.
No, whoever, I saw the stat on the game. There's been six goals for Atlanta United and only two assists, I think. Like, they've all been individual goals. Like, there's not been any team goals whatsoever versus Seattle, who's got 13 goals on the season right now. And I think
the goals
of those 10 are assisted. You know,
the goals we've scored are like it's a little harsh to say gifted goals. That's not necessarily what I mean, but it's these goals during the course of a season that are like, oh shit, that went in, or oh, that, what, who messed up on that one? Like, stuff like that. Those kind of, like, I'll call them the Tito goals. Those kind of goals that, like, just kind of the Giazzi Zarda goals, I'll say. Although I think he, whatever. Anyways, the point is that these goals that I guess you don't expect to come off, and then for whatever reason, they just happened to end up in the back of the net. Nothing has been created from back to front, from middle to front. You know, sure, you can talk about the Montreal match, but again, I mean, at that point, you're not playing your tactical style. You're just like praying at that point. So it doesn't really count in the same vein as what I'm talking about. It does, you know, it is a goal that, you know, is from the run of play that is opened up by going forward and trying something. But, you know, at that point, you're desperate. And the same thing last week with the PK. You know, if that's not called a P, I mean, that if I forget the defender's name, but if he doesn't,
Brad Smith.
Yeah, if he doesn't make that terrible tackle, I mean, that's not a goal. That, nothing's happening with that. That's probably going out for goal kick. You know, it's there's nothing to suggest that this team is going to be a very attacking team, even if they somehow figure it out. Even if they change tactics, I don't see who steps up. What player becomes, you know, if Joseph is a face of the franchise, letter A, face of the franchise, who's B? Who's the one to step up when Joseph can't be the guy? And right now he can't be the guy. You can't rely on him. So he's back. He's playing, but you can tell it's not the same. And who knows when it's going to be the same, if it's ever going to be the same. I believe it will be at some point, but that could be 6 months from now. I don't know if it's going to take that long, but I mean, it could be that long. These ACL injuries are weird and they're fucking stressful and they're not fun. They're not fun to come back from. That's why you saw him freak out when he scored the goal and goes to his trainer and gives him a big hug, because that's a long time coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the reactions, Elliot Beaven saying, positive Joseph scored and Kubo came on. It was puckered, sour emoji face. And negative, Atlanta fans need a Snickers bar. I like that, Elliot. I think that's good. I think that people can calm down a little bit, even though I've kind of let Eric get into my head a little bit and made my headspace in my I guess my outlook on the rest.
Can we just call him Eric Jones? He's the Alex Jones of the United podcast community. Alex Jones.
We're talking about Tito Villalba.
It's Alex G and Tito Villalba is no longer in the lineup.
I think the funniest thing when people try to pull those, like the XG, XA type of stats on me, and I'm like, who cares? Like, that shows you trends. It's not going to show you what's going to happen in a game. And if you want to know what happens in the game, look at the game, watch the games, and see what's been going on. I don't care about.
XG is like fluoride in the water. Something nobody's really talking about, but everybody keeps talking about it.
It's making the goals go wide.
There's helium in the soccer balls. That's why they can't fucking score.
They're parking the bus every time.
All right. Joey, a.k.a. Haleto, saying positive, we made Seattle look ordinary. I think that is quite the positive. Saying negative, Atlanta fans bitching about a draw against the clear top team in the league in their stadium. It's a long season with a new coach and new players, yet the fans have become so negative. This is why Julio Jones is leaving. It's exhausting.
It has nothing to do with the draw, though. Who's not happy about a draw away? It's the way it looked. It's the fact that nothing seems to change from game to game. It's the fact that we look seemingly just as bad as we did, you know, when we first started playing in MLS games outside of Chicago. But nothing seems to have improved. And it only looks to get worse. Maybe not worse, but it only looks, it doesn't look to change. You know, you can't depend on Barco.
I still think that it's better. Look, I still think it's better than it was.
I don't know what Barco adds a little creativity. I just don't know that it's enough creativity. Because if he were capable of enough creativity, he would have shown it by now. And he's not. He's capable of sparks every now and then. That's it.
But that's what you need. You need enough spark to start the next spark. To start the domino, like
you don't have a team that works based off sparks. You have teams that depend on players to step up individually to make something happen. The spark is supposed to come from Lennon, from Moreno, from Hyman, from.
And I think you're seeing parts of that. I think you're seeing parts again. I don't think that this team all of a sudden is not in playoff contention. And it's in its bottom of the league like it was last year. And I think it can marginally get better. Does it end up a top three? Does Atlanta United end up top three team? I don't think so right now. But again, it's still a long season, man. There's still a lot of stuff that can happen. And I don't think that they're getting worse, which has got to be a positive trend. And if that means that we're going from us getting a 1-1 draw to potentially fighting for a 1-0 win by the end of the season for somebody that's top of the league, like that's a marginal, like I don't expect Atlanta United to go from a 1-1 draw against Seattle to going into that game like what we did from our perspective going into that match where Tim was predicting a 3-0 Seattle win. Dan was predicting a 2-0 Seattle win. I was calling a 3-1 Seattle win. Like, I don't think the inverse happens where at the end of the season, where all of a sudden this team is like, we're going to go down and we're going to win 3-0 against Seattle on the road. I don't think that happens. But if this team at least can become what I think is a reasonable expectation that you can see them grinding out a 1-0 win against the top team in the league, like, that is a huge win in my opinion, and it's obviously an improvement than what we saw going into this match. And I see the startings of that.
I didn't see it necessarily that way. And sure. You're happy that you went into the best team in the league. You went into their house, found a way to get a win. But I saw it more as Seattle laying an egg after they scored and basically, you know, becoming complacent, thinking they'd score another one that never happened. And Lane United. So in that sense, yeah, Lane United did enough to not let them score again. But
they didn't, though. They still kept the high press going into the second half before Atlanta United had scored the equalizer. Like, it's not like they just sat behind midfield for the entire game. Like, were they at their best?
No, but that's not the Seattle we've seen. The second half of Seattle, it was not the Seattle we've seen, you know, the first however many games of the season. They dialed it back a little bit. Enough.
But it's not like they just stopped playing altogether.
Sure, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying
Atlanta United is a trash team. What I'm saying is that they're not going to get better than what they are now. And something radical happens. I don't see who injects life into this team.
What radical happens is the lineup changes. Like, inevitably, the lineup changes whenever Dam's in the lineup. Hosetu's playing, Barco's playing, and if those players aren't playing, then a different acquisition happens over the summer transfer window. Like, we've seen the team get shaken up and have a different playmaking ability after the midseason window whenever Eric Rometty came in. Like, it doesn't take a complete overhaul midseason for that to happen. And to your own point earlier, like, we've seen Seattle and Toronto at the bottom of the table going into midseason and end up winning the league by the end of it. Like, it's not unheard of. And I think that there's certainly talent on the field, and Joseph Martinez getting better week in and week out at least gives you that opportunity. It's a matter of how you're getting the ball to him. And that stuff can certainly be worked out in the run of play, I think.
But it wouldn't be what it looks like now. That's what I'm saying. Unless something dramatic happens, it wouldn't look like what it looks like now.
Yeah.
A little interesting tidbit from Haleto saying Christian Roldan even said post game that it was our pressure that prevented them from effectively attacking. I don't know. I think there are more positives to draw from Sunday than there are
now. I do too. Yeah. I do too.
Yeah.
And then I also agree with Eric's point. Like, I don't think that all of a sudden we're just some completely different team than what we are right now.
We
like,
seem stable, though. And I think in a stretch of turmoil that this team has gone through over the past 3 years, be it Tata leaving, Nagby leaving, FDB, I don't know, being put in against the entire fan base's will, and then COVID and Joseph's ACL. Like, there's been so much. I think there is something to be said about a little bit of stability and not having to go into games worrying that we're going to get housed. I think is a good feeling. And we have to build upon it.
And that's exactly what you're doing. And to use all the construction metaphors that you just mentioned about, like, being steady and having a foundation that you can build on. Like, can't build on a shaky foundation. And if Atlanta United is at the bottom of the table like they were last year, you're fighting an uphill battle trying to figure out what those foundations are because you're so unsteady and upended. If we're at least steady, upper middle of the table, get through a decent season, some things change, some acquisitions happen coming into next season, and you maybe get a fluke playoff win in the first round or something. Like, I don't know, man. I don't think that that's a bad outcome for this team, all things considered, to your point, Tim.
Yeah. Let me get through the I wanted to ask you guys one question after this, but I want to get through these positives, negatives from Twitter. David Benson, aka Dog for Him, saying positive. We got the road point, and thanks to MLS playoffs, getting points early and peaking late in the season seems to work. To what we talked about earlier, Seattle, Toronto's, you know, their MO. Negative, still looks slow and not a lot of creativity in the final third, but it's a long season and time to correct. Kobe Bryant Olivas, aka just Brian Olivas, saying, positive, we kept Seattle at bay most of the match. Negative, dull as a butter knife in the final third. Seems to be the sentiment all the way around. Chiefs coach Steve saying, positive, margaritas. Negative, ran out of margaritas. And then Gabe, hashtag Sosa Squad 5 Lajas, aka Gully Cuban 13, aka Lil Pistol Starter, saying, positive, good things happen when you move the ball towards goal. Negative, Moreno looks back at Brad too much, too many back passes. That's actually not a bad call. And then Just Gene, Atlanta United Till I Die, ATLUTDTID. I'm guessing that's what I means. Saying positive, much more forward movement in possession. Negative, need to drive up the middle sometimes. And have they heard of through balls? Yeah, I mean, it seems like we are trying to go into the hoof the ball into the box from the wing mentality a little too often. Like, that's
that's the default.
Yeah, it's like knocked up. He's using the dice too much. But like, again,
isn't that 2018 Jillian Gressel tactics that everybody is talking about? Like, the difference is you had a serviceable Joseph Martinez then that was getting on the end of it versus now. But again,
you also had Miro in the middle of the field being as dangerous as everybody else in the field. So I mean,
absolutely,
you're spreading out the defense, the back line a little more than you are now. Which is leading to now, it's leading to basically Joseph having to out jump four different guys in the middle of the box, or having to, you know, what I will say is that, look, the best chance that we did have was the cross that was it, Nuhu got to defensively and just poked away, the one crushed. If we saw more of that, I wouldn't complain about going out wide as much, but we just don't see that much. You don't see that much. Jillian Gressel was really good at finding ways to give himself some space and draw the attention of some of those defenders, either by cutting in or by doing enough to outrun the guy marking him and pulling one of the center backs in and then finding across the. But everything was on the run. Nothing's on the run anymore. Everything was on the run. Nothing's on the run anymore. It's all trying to, you know, it's trying to basically almost pass the ball into the goal. When you know, I don't mind taking shots. I mean, not that they don't do this, but I don't mind taking shots from outside the box. I don't mind them trying stuff that, you know, it's just weird because we don't have, you know, and no one really has this, but it's weird. I would love to know what the mindset of Gabriel Heinze is when it comes to the attack. Without having to go through something like the media, I want to have like a one-on-one conversation. This is never going to happen. This is daydreaming, but that one-on-one conversation with him, that we're just like, dude, just be real. Like, come on. Cause I don't believe anything you're saying in the media. Nothing.
No.
The only person I believe right now is Joseph.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to before I ask you guys one question, Brian Daniels' comment. I'd be remiss if I didn't go back to it. I pinned it for a second. Just all this talk about sparks has us going on. We need to get Sparks on as a new sponsor, the ultimate malt liquor energy supplement. When was the last time you guys saw Sparks? I remember, I don't know, did it get outlawed the same way that Four Loko did?
So okay,
White Claw's up in their alcohol content to basically be the new Sparks. They're marketing themselves as a high gravity seltzer water here soon, which is going to be
You're talking about high gravity, so it's going to be like Steel Reserve.
Yeah, basically, I think it's going to have like 10% alcohol in it.
Good God. Like
New Good God. White Claw high alcohol. Let's see what it's going to have. It's going to be White Claw Surge is what it's called. And the 16-ounce can of hard seltzer with 8% ABV versus the current one, which is 4, I think. So it's going to – that's going to be the move, boys.
It's going to get outlawed at some point.
Outclawed.
But the thing is, there ain't no laws when you got claws.
As soon as those new ones come out, man, I'm doing the Stone Cold Steve Austin open up the show.
We still haven't had you do the shotgun challenge to shotgun a couple White Claws or White Claw a Bone and Viv.
Now that I'd like to see.
Yeah, yeah. Schedule them back to back to back.
I think, is it Wild Basin? I don't know. Is it Wild Basin? Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
I tried that one. I tried that one, and it looks like they use sewer water. I was not a fan of that one at all. It did not taste good.
You know, it does taste good. It's my tried and true. This is Kroger Blackberry Citrus.
Oh, my favorite thing about those is that they go flat after 15 minutes.
Oh, the Kroger ones?
Yeah, you got to shotgun those for them to stay carbonated.
Dude, lately?
As soon as the air gets it, it's like you can see the carbonation dissipating.
Yeah. It's late. Like I keep these in the garage fridge. So the past couple days or week or whatever, where it's been 90 degrees and I'm out there doing woodworking, I'm just chugging these like Stone Cold Steve Austin. But they keep their God, it's miserable outside, guys. It's miserable again. Okay, so the question I wanted to ask you guys is, and Eric, we'll start off with you. What is a successful season to you?
Make the playoffs.
That's it.
At this point, make the playoffs.
As a certain seed or no?
A successful season in a general sense, make the playoffs. A successful season on a more specific sense, find a way to score more than one goal a game.
Kevin, what would be a successful outcome to the season for you?
Well, going back to my predictions at the beginning of the season, my thought was that Atlanta United would finish third in the East.
I'm pretty sure I said first, which
you said first and Dan said second. You fucking dunces. I think that third is the ceiling for this team currently. And I think that a more realistic expectation in the East is more likely fourth or probably fifth, the way things are shaking out currently.
What I will say is that the East looks like it's the garbage conference MLS this year early on.
And so, our schedule is more front loaded, which also helps.
Yeah, I'll take that too. So look, as much as I'm crapping on Atlanta United right now, I'm not saying that they're not going to make the playoffs. I'm not saying they don't have a chance. I'm dubious at how far into the playoffs they can go, but
yeah,
I do think they can make the season a successful one. You know, assuming everything stays the same, which I kind of agree with you guys. It's not going to stay the same. I don't think it's going to get much better, but
no.
And I'm using hyperbole when I say it probably can get worse, but I do think that is one thing that Atlanta United has going for it, is that the Eastern Conference is kind of garbage. I am curious about, I'm curious about this Nashville game next week, but.
No, yeah, which we'll get to in a second. But I mean, you talk about the East being garbage, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because if you look at the teams in the top seven, there are a handful in there that I was not expecting. Granted, we're only some teams are seven games, and let's say seven games into the season. But you're talking about outside of the top seven right now. You have Columbus, who's reigning MLS champions, who undoubtedly will make the playoffs. I'm just wondering who's going to end up making way. And I think it's going to be a lot more competitive Eastern Conference and a lot more formidable conference than I think that you guys are letting on, because Inter Miami, I think, is going to end up catching their stride too. And then Red Bulls too. And then you have Toronto sitting in 12th. I mean, Cincinnati's going to be a long time, I think, before they can right the ship. I don't think that happens this season. And Chicago's a weird team to me too, because they have, I don't know, maybe it's just Barrich is that good, but I guess everybody else on that team's not very good. But I don't know who makes way for Toronto, who makes way for New York Red Bulls, and who makes way for Columbus in this top seven, because right now Nashville, our opponent for Saturday, they have not lost a game yet. They're six games unbeaten.
Yeah,
and they look really good so far.
And they've got the one of the only wins against a New England team, and it's by two goals.
Yeah, I think what do they have, like two or three straight clean sheets or something like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, New England's only loss on the season is against.
They also create a lot of chances, considering. You know, that it is Nashville SC, it's not the team that we knew last year. It's a team that's creating chances, going to goal, finding opportunities to score. I watched the Austin game, and it wasn't the best representation of what they could do, but you did see the number of chances that kind of created for themselves, and that they could have won by more.
In that New England game, they had 16 shots with 7 on target. perspective against the top. This team is going in the to West. Be in Seattle. They had 10 with 2 on target.
It's weird to say, but this Nashville match is going to be a good test for what Atlanta does defensively against a team that's coming after you.
Yeah.
And we'll see how they respond. What I'm hoping happens is that Atlanta United decides we're going to play on the counter. Not that that's their tactic, but they find those moments to play on the counter and find a way to capitalize. Because I think, again, if you can get Joseph running onto a ball, that's a different ball game than what they've been playing so far this year.
I think so. Looking at the score, the app, and they're doing the preview for the Atlanta and Nashville game. It's just like key players, team form, that sort of thing. It's just so funny. Like, Randall Leal is their key player. 2 goals, 2 assists, 8 key passes, 7, I think, chances created. And then Brooks Lennon is ours. 0 goals, 0 assists, 4 tackles. Like, the focus gets switched to tackles, interceptions, and blocks, which I don't think anybody really pays attention to all that much in soccer. But I just think it's quite the juxtaposition right there to see their key player versus ours. And it's
Well, again, they're just putting twice as many. You go to – so, and you can never really do sports math. You know, well, we did this against this team. They did this against this team. But, again, to Eric's point, you're looking at a team in Nashville that is consistently generating shots and shots on target twice as much as what Atlanta's been putting in week over week. However, that said, Atlanta's holding some teams that have also managed to do a pretty large – amount of shot creation against other opponents that aren't Atlanta United. And so if Atlanta can stifle that or maintain that possession battle to try to keep Nashville from doing that, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out as a good test to see, does this possession based tactic really work whenever you're playing against teams that are consistently generating a lot more shots and a lot more shots on goal than what Atlanta's been able to do week in and week out.
What I hope is that it really takes Nashville out of their game, and they're not, you know, the game of keep away becomes real, and you know, you don't see that many chances created because they just don't have the ball that much. I would assume that a team like Nashville, who struggled last year, who is, you know, on a really good start this year, is looking to keep that momentum alive and is going to take it to Atlanta, which is more of what I expect to see and how Atlanta United handles that. I think there's an opportunity for Atlanta United to really, I go back to it, like, find a way to, you know, if Nashville is going to really push you, find a way to use the spaces in behind, find a way to use the space that's opened up in the middle to your advantage. Find a way to change the feel of the game, so it's not so much more passive and it's much more, well, not much more aggressive, but aggressive enough to get you a win, to get you, you know, to get you more goals in Nashville.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you guys if you had any. It came out today. Our buddies over at Atlanta United Fan TV, I believe they were the ones who had kind of surfaced this rumor about Atlanta United making a $15 million bid for Ronnie from Palmeiras down in Brazil.
I think it's Roni.
Yes. Macaroni. Beefaroni. Yeah, that's correct. I haven't had a chance to look at his, like I said, it's just kind of surfaced today. I don't play Football Manager. I don't know a lot about a lot of these kind of I don't know a lot about the South American leagues, to be honest, or any of the players down there. But it seems like people are quite excited. I'm excited for the fact that it's a winger that we're actually in talks to sign, but $15 million. That number has kind of not worked out for us in the past.
I'm just trying to think. That's DP money.
What TM is saying. He says, I'm gonna need Paul to sign off that it's a good deal. Talking about Paul McDonough.
I don't know how you manage that. I trust the front office when it comes to that, because you're paying everyone else stupid money, so you figure out a way to do it you know, in the past. But I'm not confident about anyone this front office brings in right now. So sure, they can, you know, you can get excited about this rumor, but
yeah, it doesn't seem like he's a goal scorer. But I mean, if I mean, we don't have true wingers playing wing positions outside of our wing backs. Like, we don't have the guys flanking Joseph really playing.
If it's a chance, really if he creates chances for other people, then he doesn't need to necessarily be a goal scorer. If he can become his own, you know, whatever, his own version of Julian Gressel, then great. You could use that right now. You could use someone that can create chances, that can open things up. But if it's another, Tito wouldn't be a good fit right now. I would like him on the team because he finds a way to score somehow, but his general style of play wouldn't be a good fit right now. You've got that with Lennon, just less speed, and Lennon's doing fine. So if it's just a replica of that on the other side or whatever, then I don't know what that does. You need a playmaker. I don't care where on the field it is. You just need a playmaker that can help draw some attention from defenders, open up some space, you know, behind whatever it needs to be. You got to find someone that can make plays in the middle of the field or draw defenders in to open up space for other players that are running in. That's the other problem I have. No one else is running with Joseph. No one. Yeah. No one's running with Joseph.
I like Dirty Bird Person's comment saying, of all the DP rumors or all potential DPs rumored in the past 3 years, this guy seems to have the least hype. So he'll probably score 15 goals. Kevin, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of his highlight film. I haven't yet.
I haven't
either. But do you think it's definitely a positive if we're going after like more attacking talent, winger type of talent?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know about winger specifically, just because of the players that we already have in the lineup. And I don't know how that fits in because of all the positions. And as much as we talked about depth that on the defensive side of the ball, I feel like we've got a bevy of wingers on both sides versus center attacking midfielders, which I think is where the biggest gap is in this lineup. And I don't know what a winger brings to you right now that the wingers we have in this lineup aren't already, unless it's replacing a Barco where he's, you know, they're potentially shoring up for him to be gone in the summer transfer window or something like that. But the players we have here now, I don't know how he fits in with that lineup, but certainly somebody that's going to give you a more attacking threat, I think, is a positive one. I just think it may be misplaced.
Yeah.
I wonder if that is what they're trying to do. Sell off Barco. Well, I don't know how you do that. I don't really know how you do that while he's injured, but
yeah, that's my thought too, is that, you know, we may be walking into the summer transfer window with two DP slots open. If we could buy down Alan Franco and then Ezekiel Barco's sold off, then we have potentially two spots to fill up. And I don't know. Who knows? We missed out on Aguero, which sucks. Could have got Aguero, but he wants to go play with Messi, I guess. But
just give me anyone with some flair. Just give me a different face of the franchise right now. I love Joseph. I've none against Joseph, but he can't do it by himself. Give me someone else. Give me another Miguel Almirón.
So that, yeah, I don't know where we find that though.
That kind of impact. If it's not him, I don't want him.
All right, score predictions for this weekend. Eric, how are you feeling about the Nashville game? What are you thinking score-wise for the game?
I'm going to say a 1-1 draw.
I'm going to say 1-0 win, Atlanta United. And I think Joseph will get it.
I think I like Elliot Beaven. 3-0 Atlanta, Guzan hat trick. We're going to play him at forward.
I think being home is going to help. You've got some momentum coming into it. I think you could get if your possession tactic works and you get this Nashville team frustrated and maybe Nashville gets cocky thinking that they're going to come in here and run something. You've got a little bit of momentum off of the draw against Seattle. I think there's a lot of stuff, again, positive takeaways from that Seattle match. It's going to be a weird goal. I don't think it's something that's going to be convincing where Atlanta United is going to dominate, but I could see a 1-0 win.
If Atlanta United is similar to the possession is similar to what we've seen lately, you see that Nashville is clearly frustrated and you still don't get much going forward. You still don't create that many chances. Are you more worried then than you are now? So if everything goes, if everything goes exactly according to LA Knight's plan, and they still can't find a way to get to create chances,
and it's and it ends up being 0-0, is that what you're
saying? Or 1-1 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's more concerning. I don't think that I'm overly concerned now. Like, it's not like I feel like this team is struggling to stay afloat and just staying above water. I think that they're, like Tim said, I think they're stable. I think they're going to win some. They're going to lose some. You'll probably have one or two that they get blown out in. I'm struggling to find games that they're going to blow somebody else out in, but I'm not going into every single match like I was last season where I was like, I don't fucking know. Like, this there's no fucking way they're going to pull something out under Steven Glass where nobody wants to play. Nobody looks like they want to play. One thing I'll say is at least the team looks like they want to play, and they certainly want to be better. And I think that's a positive enforcing tactic. I don't know, man. I think that if they can hold teams like Seattle, I mean, just again, back to what I was saying before, like you look at other teams that have consistently had more shots on goal against other opponents that Atlanta's been able to stifle a little bit more. Like, that gives you some sign for, I mean, Montreal had a couple of games where they had 16, 17 shots and 6 or 7 shots on goal against other teams like Columbus. You know, they had 20 shots and 3 on goal. You know, Atlanta holds Montreal to 10, I think it is. Same thing with Seattle. Again, like, you're seeing a team that, based on that possession tactic, it seems to be working with teams that are having games where they're getting a lot of shots. The big difference being the Montreal versus Nashville game, where Montreal still only had 9 and Nashville had 18. I think, Eric, to your point, like, Nashville's probably going to be a bigger test than Seattle was for this team. But the positive I see going into it is that they've consistently shown that they can stifle a team that's been putting up big numbers against other opponents so far, very, very early in the season, albeit. But we'll see. And it's at home. I think that plays into it, too. Tim, what was your prediction?
I say 2-0. I think Joseph and Emerson Hyman both score goals. And then go into predictions in the trap. Hileto saying 0-0 draw. Richard Gordon 1-0 Atlanta. Elliot Beaven, as we said, 3-0 Atlanta on the back of a Guzan hat trick. And then Brittany S saying 2-1 Atlanta United. Ooh, Champions League final prediction.
7-0
Man City.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking about, you know what I would want right now on this team is the European veteran looking to come to retire in MLS.
Yeah.
Stick him in the midfield somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be great. Just dead middle of the field. Just you need a traffic controller in the middle of the field. You need somebody that's going to get everybody where they need to be and make sure that you need an orchestrator in the middle of the field.
Someone with the ego to just give everyone the middle finger and just go, no, just go, dude, go play.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would take that right now. I have no reason to think that would ever happen, but I would 100% take it. And in the past, I would never want that, but I would take that right now.
New name in the trap, Carlos Rangel, I'm guessing. Rangel, maybe. Atlanta United needs to avoid conceding set pieces. Nashville has some towers that can take advantage of this team.
Can we laugh for a second at how bad Atlanta United set pieces are? Corners, free kicks, any of them. Any of them.
Terrible. Real bad. Been real bad. And considering that they were trying to set up the run of play against Seattle to draw set pieces and then proceed to do nothing with them every time.
You would think
they did a little bit better at it.
It's so bad that Joseph decided I'm gonna take a free kick. He's like, I'm tired of seeing this nonsense. I'm done.
I'm taking it. Put it on my back.
Gosh. Listening to John Strong talk about how was it John Strong? Yeah, John Strong talking about how a corner kick was an opportunity for Atlanta United. I was like, come on, man. I know you've been watching this team long enough to know that this is not an opportunity. This is just, you know, we're praying at this point that anything goes right.
All right.
Look, hopefully better days. Hopefully I look like an absolute idiot, asshole, dumbass for everything I've said.
One thing that's been consistent hopefully over five seasons of Atlanta United, it's you looking like a duck. So here we are.
I was right about Biddy. I'm right about Barco. I'm right about Tito. I'm right about basically everything I've said ever. The only thing I was right about, the only thing I was really wrong about was Tata Martino leaving. That's the only thing I was wrong about.
Man. Anything else, boys? Eric, plugs. Where are you guys at these days? What you got going on?
So Mounds of the South, I don't know I'm going to be on it, but they're going to be on tomorrow. So either expect a release tomorrow late or what day is tomorrow? Wednesday?
Yeah. Wednesday.
Yeah. Or release on Thursday. That'll be Sam and Josh. I'm in Montana working on other podcasts, so which has been fun. Cool little new adventure I've been on for the past 7 months, which is why doing the podcast has been tough because just trying to keep up with work and now that I'm traveling and stuff. So it's cool doing some real work, looking at different true crime stuff. Nice. Which is a new thing for me, and I'm in love with it so far. So
that's awesome.
Awesome.
You can find us boys on Twitter at Home Before Dark. That's before spell B and the number 4. Be sure to go check out manscaped.com. Use promo code HBD to get yourself 20% off and free shipping. Find Tim and I individually on Instagram. Tim, where can they find you?
At Tim Herb.
Find me at The Architect. That's at @_ARC. Number 1, TECT. Thank you guys so much. As always, be home before dark.
Bye.